Many of us will have that very first class that inspired us to take a new subject or inspired us potentially on a new career path. And one of the themes of this series has been a lot about education and training regarding geology and also volcanoes, but also people's personal journey. And so I'm delighted today to be joined by Edith Canalina Rojas, who's an assistant professor of geology at the College of the Desert in California. Hello, Edith. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for joining us today for this episode of Volcanology. It's been really, really inspiring. You're someone I've followed for a number of years on social media, and your passion for teaching students, but also for the outdoors, getting people involved in nature, is something really, really inspiring. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you today about geology, teaching, and also your work as a teacher in the geosciences.
Yeah, I'm excited. I am a firm believer that science should be accessible for everyone. And I think that's why I have spent so much time on social media, just teaching little snippets of what I do in my classroom.
Fantastic. So to kick things off, it will be amazing to hear a bit about your journey. Where did life begin for you? What got you stoked, you know, into geology? Was it a normal path? Was there a convoluted way? Many of us have many different ways we got into this subject.
Yeah, so actually it was a hot mess of a path. I was born and raised in Nicaragua, and we immigrated to the States when I was 18. We came as a family, my mom and my sisters. But by the time we left Nicaragua, I had attended 2 years of law school. I was very happy. I liked it. And yes, I finished high school when I was 16. So I went straight to law school.
law school at 16.
As a 16-year-old who had no idea what she was doing.
But you can't say you weren't driven.
Exactly. That we cannot say. But so, and I'm very candid about this. I've always loved science. I've used to have a science lab in my backyard where I collected rocks and sand of different colors. And I would run all of these experiments as I was growing up, but I never thought I was smart enough to do science. So I went to law school because somehow I thought that was easier.
There we go. That's our tagline for the episode. Geology is harder than law school.
Exactly. So then we came to the States, and I had to do it all over. Because I didn't speak the language, I had to learn how to speak English. I had to get a high school diploma because I didn't want the equivalency. That didn't sit well with me. I was like, I want a high school diploma if I can get that. So what ended up happening is that because I am what's considered a non-traditional student, now I couldn't go straight to a four-year university. So everybody was like, go to community college. Community college is like a really great way, a cheaper way to get started to go to college. And so I went to our community college, and I declare liberal studies as a major because I was like, I could either teach, or that is also a path for law. And then I took a geology class.
Oh, but you were still thinking about law at this point.
I was still
though, when
thinking
you went
about
to community
law.
College.
Yeah, okay. I went to community college, and I was like, that was like the whole goal, right? Like I came to the United States, and I was very angry and very upset that I, you know, like I was learning to speak again. And my whole goal was to get back to college and to go back to law school. That was my original plan. So I had to take Earth science for teachers, right? As part of my requirements for my liberal studies. And I absolutely loved it for so many reasons. It was the first time that I saw a woman scientist. Like this is, we're not very exposed to them in Nicaragua. Like, I mean, you get female doctors, but this was like, Dr. Shadman was like an expert in rocks, and she was a rock climber and did all of these amazing things. So I love the idea that a woman could be like, could do like all of these amazing things. And then the class was also so hard. It had so much terminology. My English was still very broken, and I'm having to learn science, and I'm having to translate my books. But I had never been more excited about a class. And I remember my roommate at the time was like, there is something here for you, Edith. Like, you really seem to be enjoying this. But I didn't listen. So I moved on. And then I needed money. And I saw that there was an internship with the USGS. And I had one geology class. And I applied for the internship and I ended up getting it. So now I have an office across from Caltech at the USGS. And I'm working with this amazing scientist. And again, my boss, it's a woman who's like the most badass person I've ever met. And then I got to sit in these rooms where science was being discussed, but it was being discussed in terms of how to keep the population safe, right? We would talk about how to prevent buildings from collapsing during earthquakes, how to educate the public. We were talking about flash floods. And then I was like, there is more to science than research. There is like a human aspect. And I like switched my career path. I was like, forget this. This is what I'm going to do.
So that was the moment.
That was the moment. I was sitting in this room with a bunch of scientists whose concern was how to keep the population safe, how to educate them enough about nature that it wouldn't kill them. And I was like, this is incredible. And I switched career path at that point.
Wow. So it's interesting that, because obviously you grew up in Nicaragua, a country well known for its, you know, geohazards. There's earthquakes, there's plenty of volcanoes to go at.
Yep.
But obviously there's complications in there from, you know, governments and how, you know, public education about hazards and money within the geosciences and the observatories. But were you exposed to that a lot?
Oh my gosh.
Because you had an interest in the, you know, in the general outdoors and nature, as you said before, but maybe not the exposure to it.
No, I was super exposed. So I live, my town, the only reason why we exist is because a volcanic eruption obliterated the original town, like 20, 25 kilometers away. And so like I grew up knowing how powerful nature is. And I mean, Pompeii style, that's how the ruins are, very similar to Pompeii. So like I grew up hearing all of these stories about how this huge stratovolcano was going to basically kill us eventually because we didn't migrate far enough from the volcano. And you can see Momotombo from my backyard. And there is another volcanic complex that you can see if you get outside, like our house, you can see it from our street. There is this volcanic complex that has this huge crater. We call him Cerro del Hoyo because it has this huge hole in it that we can see from our street. And then we had Cerro Negro, which was the first volcanic eruption that I saw. It's a very young volcano. So I tell this to my students all the time. Earthquakes, they don't faze me. I grew up in earthquake country. When you're next to a volcano, that's an everyday occurrence. Ash coming down from the sky, not a big deal for us. You know, you just like clean your roof with a broom.
Oh, not again.
Exactly.
Another Tuesday morning.
Yeah, exactly. I need my umbrella today. So nature was like all around us, and I was very curious because people were so fearful, and fear is the last thing that I had. I was just so fascinated that this mountain could wipe us like from existence. And I genuinely just wanted to know why.
And so when was that last big historic eruption that caused all that destruction? How long ago was that?
Very, very long ago. I couldn't tell you. I don't have the dates, but the historic eruption was very, very old. And then Momotombo had one more eruption about 8 years ago, but it was a little one. And I was really bummed because I spent my childhood waiting for it to erupt. And of course, I'm living in the U.S. when this goes on.
Yeah. How old were you when you saw Cerro Negro?
I was 4.
four. Wow, and you remember that?
It's like vividly. It's like I grew up in a small one horse town. That was like the event of my life at four, like to go see a volcano erupting. And I am very thankful that my parents were curious people and that instilled a sense of curiosity in us, because like I remember my mom and my dad being like, get ready, we're gonna go to this high point on our town so you guys can see the volcano erupting.
Wow, as far as early memories go, as you say, that's quite a vivid one to remain with you.
Yeah.
So now fast forwarding back, you know, to this internship, you're deciding to switch career, you've taken this geology class. You're at a point where obviously you've had this background of growing up, exposed to all these things and knowing so much about them. Was there a point of almost all the pieces clicking together now? You can see the societal impacts, how people actually have careers where they talk about, you know, how do we keep humans safe? How do we keep populations educated? And you've seen that growing up surrounded by it. So is this when everything started to click?
Yeah, so I started to sit in these classes, right? And so many things just click, right? Like Momotombo has these very violent eruptions because it's a stratovolcano, but Cerro Negro has this, it's more of an effusive type because it's a cinder cone volcano. And like, it's kind of cool because growing up, we could get very close to the eruption of Cerro Negro and we could just see the lava flowing. But I never quite understood. We feared them. Like in our town, we feared them the same, but they cause very different damages, right? Or like the risk is slightly different. You can outrun a lava flow. You cannot outrun a pyroclastic flow. So
yeah, very different footprints of hazards and risks.
Exactly. But that was like that click. I was like, oh, not all volcanoes are the same. That was like the first thing that kind of clicked for me. And then the other thing was when I was five, I was asking all of these questions about volcanoes. And I was like, it just looks like a mountain. And I asked my mom, what was the difference between a mountain and a volcano? Because we have both. And my mom was getting very frustrated. And she's like, I don't know. Why don't you figure it out? Like,
there we go.
Yeah. So I'm sitting in a classroom and I'm like, oh, a volcano is a mountain with a vent. Like, and I'm like, ha, mom, I figured it out.
It took some years, but we got there.
I got there. So I had those moments, but I also had the very heartbreaking moments, right? Where I realized how little we are taught about like our volcanoes and volcanism in our town and in third world countries in general or impoverished countries in general. I was also very heartbroken when I learned that there are ways to retrofit your house to avoid people dying. And so we don't have disasters like what happened in Haiti. And to know that that's not something we do in my country is not something that we even think about.
Yeah. Yeah. So it makes a big difference when you start considering where you are. Then, you know, you're in Southern California. You're in probably one of the most scientifically strong and aware counties when it comes to, you know, earthquake hazards, the potential for droughts and those kinds of risks as well, extreme weather. And then applying that back to, you know, how you grew up as well. But I guess those are the ways we learn, and we learn about that exposure.
Exactly.
So yeah. After that point, then what kind of route did you decide to go down? Did you then decide to go into teaching, or did you continue on through your geology education career after those internships?
So I worked on my bachelor's, but my intention then, I had a really great time in community college. It was life-changing. I often say that community college saved my life. You know, like as an immigrant who didn't understand the system, being in a community college afforded me a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise, that I wouldn't have known. I mean, I was in junior college and I got a paid internship with the USGS. Like that's like, I would have never been exposed to that otherwise. So my goal was that I wanted to pay it forward. I wanted to go back and do the same thing for non-traditional students in general, but my heart is very
my heart was out to people with non-traditional path. You know, whether you're an immigrant or maybe you're a mom with children or a vet who's coming back to school. They need a lot of support, and community colleges gives you that. So I wanted to go back. So I always knew that I was going to do more than my bachelor's. I didn't know if I was going to go all the way to a PhD, but I knew I wanted a more advanced degree to be able to teach at the community college level. So while I was doing my master's, I was teaching science at an elementary school, and I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. Like I knew that was not it. I knew that teaching, it was very rewarding. Like I loved that part, but I knew that I was not going to be teaching children. That was just
a different kind of patience you need. Like I love doing young school, young student school outreach, but I could not do it every day. I think because I'm so ingrained into my subjects and my love and my passion for the subjects that I don't know how to necessarily teach outside of that. Like I couldn't, teach math, English and science and history and everything else.
Yeah.
But I can go into a school for a day and talk about earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis and hazards and oceans and marine biology, but I couldn't do it every day.
It's a lot, and I was really lucky that I was only teaching science, but at some point, like just like you, like I love my discipline, and the science that you do with children, right at the end of the first year, I knew it wasn't enough. I didn't feel challenged. I didn't feel, you know, I love prepping for my lectures. I love reading, like rereading the books or like looking into papers to have fun facts. So I miss that. It's a different skill set for sure. But I miss doing just like higher like science, if that makes sense. So it was like a smooth transition. While I was doing my master's, my advisor told me that it was a very good idea if I started teaching the labs for the school, and especially because that was my end goal. And that helps pay for school too, like if you teach. So I started teaching college students, and it was so awesome. It was also really weird because I had a lot of students who had been my classmates. So that was really interesting because I was now a master's student and I'm teaching my former classmates. So that was really interesting. But I really liked it, and it was really exciting and it was different, it was challenging. So I knew and I was teaching at Cal State LA, I was teaching at a four-year university, but I still knew that that's not where I was going to stay. Like it was a stepping stone.
So I think this is an interesting point to talk about what community college actually is, because it's something that's not as familiar or even kind of a concept around the world. It's something we don't really have here in the United Kingdom or really in Europe. I'm familiar with it from being in the US. And it's a very, very powerful tool, but it's, you know, I think over the years, you know, it's had the different stigmas attached to it or misconceptions. So it'd be really nice to hear your almost kind of like overview of what community college is and actually what the challenges and the benefits are of a community college and what that path can mean for you.
Yeah, so community colleges are designed to give you your general education. And I don't know if Europe or the United Kingdom also does general ed, which is your basic writing, math skills, your science, your government. It's general education in the United States is designed to make you a well-rounded human being before you go into your career. And that's what you do if you go to a four-year university. You spend your first 2 years also doing general education. So community colleges are basically, like if we were in Europe, we would call it a two-year university. So you get to do your general education and you can take a couple of more upper division classes. Also through the community college, if you're getting if you know you're going to transfer for geology, you will get your geology associate degree at the community college. But here's the thing, it's way more affordable. It's, you know, like I think at our institution, if you were to pay out of pocket, it's about $3,500 for the year.
Wow.
That's about $20,000 per year at a four-year institution.
Yeah, and
all of us, it's a huge difference. All of us professors have the same degrees that somebody in a four-year institution would have. A lot of us are also teaching at four-year institutions and teaching at the community college level. But a lot of the stigma is that we don't have entrance exams. We don't have entrance essays. Our doors are open for everyone. So a lot of the stigma is that we get students that have lesser value, right? We'll get the students who couldn't get into a four-year college. And we could go into the nuance of why a lot of them can get into a four-year college. But, you know, a lot of the reason why we get students is because it's just way affordable and you're getting the same education, sometimes with better quality, because our classrooms are 28 students as opposed to 150. So you get a lot more one-on-one with your professor. So again, the community college is cheaper, but the education and the quality of education is the same as that of a four-year institution. And in fact, our rates of transfer are a lot higher. If you couldn't get into UCLA right out of high school, if you go to your community college and you make the grade, now it's a lot easier to get into UCLA or Stanford or any other schools. Like, or success rate in transferring, it's a lot higher than when students get straight out of high school.
So how transferable is that then? So could you only go to a very local community college? You couldn't go across state lines to a community college, but you could then transfer elsewhere.
Yes, you can. You can go to any community college in the United States and then apply to transfer to any university in the United States.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. The only catch is, right, like if you want to go to community college in Arizona, you're going to pay out-of-state tuition. So now you're paying a little bit more. But no, you can go to any community college and then transfer to any university your heart desires.
Okay. I didn't know if there was maybe only, say, set community colleges only put you for. So if you went to your college, it only propelled you maybe into California universities.
But we prep you for everything. We prep you for any place you want to go.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I know at the University of Hawaii, we had a lot of students coming from the Pacific West Coast. The Pacific West Coast of the USA. And so coming with a community college transfer degree. And that was the way that most people from the Pacific Coast actually came into our degrees. Most of the students who started from the beginning were local students from Hawaii. And I think they actually have a transfer system where the out-of-state tuition to come over to Hawaii is cheaper just for the West Coast. I think there's some agreement there.
So many deals with so many schools. We are very good at making partnerships to ensure that our students succeed. Again, because a lot of students are non-traditional. A lot of them come from impoverished backgrounds impoverished backgrounds is the biggest thing, and we want to, you know, education is the greater equalizer. So we want to make sure that they are getting the skills and the tools, not just the skills to survive a four-year university, but also the tools like the financial aid that they need. So we work a lot with the four-year universities to help students transfer more successfully, not to just transfer, but to finish their degrees.
Yeah, the level of support, it sounds, in comparison is really just, well, it's fantastic in terms of your student to staff ratio, you know, looking out for where your students are going next, the backgrounds that they've come into from there as well. And you're at the College of the Desert, which is an area which has quite a high Hispanic population, I imagine.
Yes, we're a Hispanic serving institution. That is correct.
Wow, yes.
So that is our thing. You know, we are a rural community still. A lot of agricultural workers live out here. Yeah, so definitely we serve a community that is predominantly Latino and on the lower end of the economic scale, yeah.
And how do you think that translates to your students, particularly for them seeing you as their professor?
It's my favorite thing. I'm very candid with them because a lot of them come into the classroom and now, you know, they get to see me wearing nice clothes and like spewing all of this knowledge, and they think, ah, she's always been smart. She always had the tools and the money to be where she is. And I'm like, no, no, no. I was a community college student just like all of you. In fact, I spent my community college years translating my textbooks. So we talk about that. We talk about, I always tell them that I lived below poverty line until I was a master's student, until I graduated. So just to kind of remind them of the path and just to remind them that, you know, life might be really, really hard right now, but there's an out and education might be it for you.
You even said it towards the beginning of the episode, you know, how you sat in your classroom for the very first time were being taught by a woman scientist.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
Now you're on the other side of the table, but particularly for being able to educate students with, you know, the same language and cultural backgrounds as yourself as well. The importance of that representation, but also first person direct empathy for things like overcoming a language barrier.
Yeah.
It must just be so important for them.
I think so. And they really appreciate it. And even just last night, I have two Japanese students who like are really struggling with the language, and I was helping them. And, you know, like, we do a lot of like signing and a lot of like props in the class, or like putting in front of them what things mean. And I don't get bent over like students having a translator. You cannot have it on the exam, but I need to level the playing field. So I allow translators in my classroom, at least while you're solving the lab. Cause you need to learn the language. You're learning two languages, science and English. So, but we were doing this last night and I'm getting teary eyed because every time they get a rock name, they cheer and they get up and they hug each other. And I'm getting teary eyed because I'm like, I was you not too long ago. And just to see their excitement and just to be able to do that for them, it's very rewarding for me, or to be able to do it for any of my Hispanic students when I'm able to speak my native tongue with them and like, you know, like quickly translate something. And then I always repeat it back in English, but it's very rewarding. But I think the most rewarding part for me is that they get to see an immigrant and a woman of color in a position of power and a scientist, which
I know how dedicated and, you know, impassioned you are for your students and by your students. So it sounds like it's really fulfilling. And like I said earlier, you said the two words or three words, paying it forward, which it sounds like that's exactly where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah,
I guess you have the added benefit. Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I guess you have that. Yeah, the added benefits for geology, obviously being a very, very physical and in your face science, and where you are in, you know, in Southern California, surrounded by such incredible landscapes, and geology being near the Mojave Desert, being near the Salton Sea, you must, to be able to get these students out there physically touching the things they're learning about as well.
Oh, we had the best backyard. There's this whole thing where people look down at the Coachella Valley, and I sell it so hard to my students. Like, you have no idea of the marvelous, like the wonders that we have out here. And I always make the joke that we can open up any chapter in the book and I can take them and we can touch that. We can go and look at it and find it. I'm like, I will have you stand on the San Andreas Fault, or I will have you look at the volcanic domes in the Salton Sea. Because all they see is this agricultural small town. And I'm like, it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, you only need to go an hour or two outside of your door and you are touching everything you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So now at the College of the Desert, what classes do you teach specifically to your students? Is it just the basic geology?
I have the basic intro classes, which is intro to geology, earth science, environmental geology. And then I also teach the more advanced one if you want to get your associates in geology, which is historical geology. and then I'm writing Geology of California and Natural Hazards and Disasters, so we can offer some more classes for our students.
Oh, so you're developing something new for them. That's yeah. You say it ties back to that societal relevance, because it's great to have the physical science background, which of course we all need in this, but I think we miss that, or at least I know I did in the very early stages, you know, the societal relevance for people. And it's becoming more prevalent as we start to create more of those bridges and jobs and opportunities that cross the physical science and the social science. So it's great that you're able to bring that in at a community college level as well.
Yeah, and I want to, like, it's very big for me that they know why we do the things we do, or why we learn the things we do. Like, you know, a simple example I give them is like, why do you care about clay? And I'm like, well, let me tell you, look at all of our mountains. If you have the side of a mountain that's rich in clay, it rains, the clay is going to get, that water is going to expand, and now you have a landslide. That's why that matters to you. Or why does it matter, you know, to understand chemical bonding in Geology 101? And I'm like, okay, if, like, especially for us, there is, you know, like pyrite everywhere. I'm like, and there is a lot of pyrite and it starts to decompose. Now you have lead in your water sources because we have a bunch of aquifers out here. So I love teaching the application, or like letting them know why they're learning the things they're learning. Because I think in a lot of our intro courses, there is a disconnect, right? We have our students learn all of this knowledge, but we don't tell them, or I don't think we're doing the best job of saying, you do it or you would apply it like this. This is why you need to know this. This is why it matters.
Yeah. And have you had any of your past students, you know, get back in touch or tell you what they went on to do or what they're doing now?
Yes. I have one that just got a job as the geologist. Oh. And she was one of my first students when I thought I was a train wreck teaching. So I'm very proud that I didn't ruin her. So yeah, she's a geologist. Like, I remember when she switched her majors, she came to my office and we were talking about career path. And she was telling me that she loved geology, but she didn't want to teach. And I was like, you don't have to teach. There are so many other things you can do with geology. So she works for our water company now as their environmental geologist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fancy. Yeah, that's, if there's not a better reward than somebody coming back to you after those years and telling you that even just the little thing that you did for them made a difference.
Yeah, and it's the hardest thing about this job. Like, I love instant gratification. I'm big on it. And in this job, it's all about delayed gratification. You're not going to know what you're doing for those students until you get that email a year later saying, you taught me how to study science, and that's why I didn't fail out of my senior course. Or Ms. Rojas, like, you inspire me to do something else with my life. Like, all of those things, but they don't happen immediately in this job. You just have to be patient.
Yeah, but now you've been doing it for a few years. Hopefully there's a slow, steady cycle of people maybe getting jobs or going on to other degrees.
Thank goodness. Yeah, now I get, like, you know, I get a lot more. I hear more from my former students for sure than I did like 5 years ago. Yeah.
Do you get the opportunity to talk directly about your upbringing in Nicaragua and being surrounded by volcanoes in your classes?
I do. I get to make it very personal, which I think is like, I'm very lucky. Like, you know, like when I talk about volcanoes, when I talk about earthquakes, I lived through Hurricane Mitch, which also caused a lahar flow on like Casitas volcano. So I can talk about those things that they're learning that I lived through firsthand. And it makes, you know, like, my students will always tell me, I hated your class, but I loved you. So, like, you could make this class so interesting. And, like, it was never boring. And I'm like, fantastic. You still hate geology, though.
Yes. Well, they took something away from it, at least.
Yeah, they did. And they do learn something. And sometimes,
you know, all they will learn is to love their valley. They will love, they get to go on a hike and they get to understand the rocks that they're seeing. And sometimes that's all they will take, but it's a new respect for the place where they live. And that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I remember teaching a similar of one of our TAing one of our classes for geology 101, where most people took it to fill their science requirements. And so I had undeclared majors, finance majors, art majors, everything under the sun. And my best student was actually a senior in finance. He was not, he was graduating that term and was literally taking his final class in geology. And yeah, sailed through it, A+, no question whatsoever. He absolutely loved it. And it was more just that he enjoyed just being outdoors and connecting with the world around him in a way that he hadn't really thought about before. So even if people don't necessarily go on to do, you know, a further degree in geology or get a job as a geologist or something in the earth science, you can still give people something to take away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, so for you, is there a favorite part that you like to teach? Do you have a particular, you know, week or two that whenever it comes up, you go, this is it, this is my time, this is my jam?
I love teaching about igneous rock. I learning to read the rocks, right? Like asking the right questions so you can figure out if it's extrusive or intrusive. You can figure out the rate of cooling by looking at the texture of the rock. I love teaching that. They hate it. They hate it because there is so much terminology. But then when the lab is done, they're like, this is like really cool. You can like you can literally ask the rock questions and it'll tell you its history. And so I love teaching that. I love teaching the earthquake section. I love teaching, of course, like volcanoes. That is one of my favorite ones, talking about hazards specifically. I love the section on mass wasting. I'm big into like landslides and things like that, especially because the valley, the north, south, east, west, we're surrounded by mountains. So we get quite a bit of like landslides and debris flows and things like that. So I have found a new love on that out here. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. As you said, they're all very, very physical phenomena. I used to love prepping exactly for the igneous rocks class.
Yeah.
Because I'd spend an hour in the room beforehand using the full chalkboard
yes!
to do the full, the
do
full
the
diagram.
Tables. Yes.
What minerals appear here and there.
Oh, yes. And just hearing them, like I asked them, I was like, why is it impossible to find quartz in an ultramafic rock and take it to Xi? And they're like, that makes no sense. The temperature is too high.
You're like, yes.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, it's been really, really great to chat to you about some of these things and, you know, what inspires you to learn, us to learn, and how we can pass that on as well. So I guess more of a personal note, is there anything, you know, have you got a favorite moments through your history in geology, through your background, your upbringing, teaching, research around volcanoes or hazards?
Yeah, my favorite memory is when my parents took us to Volcan Masaya, which is, it's a shield volcano with a gigantic crater in a lava lake. And I must have been 10, I think. And I stood at the edge of a crater with a lava lake below my feet. And it's the coolest freaking thing. And I didn't know how significant that is. Not a lot of people get that opportunity. And I just remember the heat and the earth below my feet feeling really hot. And there was, it was so majestic. And all I could think of was, this is the happiest I will ever feel. Like just standing at the edge of this crater. It's one of my favorite memories for so many reasons. You know, I went with my parents and it was far from our small town, but to be able to see the power of nature is really something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly a sensory overload.
Yeah,
to be in one of those locations.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I went and visited it, years later, like I've gone back and I went at night because I wanted to see the lava lake glowing. And I'm standing at the edge of this crater. Nicaragua doesn't have as many regulations as other countries, so you can literally be at the edge of the crater. And my entire body started shaking violently. And I was like, oh, there is that survival instinct kicking in.
Yeah. The one we don't really have as a child, where exactly. Let's get closer to the edge.
Yeah, the one that doesn't know that you might die in this situation is kicking in. But it was a full circle, right? And coming back as a geologist was just incredible. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And also for chatting about your journey and your passion and for teaching as well. It sounds like it's a very rewarding journey and circle that you've come through.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes, well, yeah, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody listening as well to this episode of Volcanology. We hope you've enjoyed it.